where she served on its casket team. She's married to a former cop. They have two adult sons. Living her life. Living her best life. And somehow or another, this 26-year veteran, this president of the police union, did not know the difference between her gun and her taser. She yells out, "Taser, taser," while she's holding a gun. And then she shoots him and goes, "Holy S-H-I-T." 410-319-8888. I want to speak for a moment here, and I want to hear your calls as well as we're talking about how we begin to transform policing. We have been celebrating all week SB 202, talking about the work that we're doing and how we go forward. And we are just so supportive and just appreciative of State Senator Jill P. Carter, an American politician, represents the 41st Legislative District of Baltimore City in the Maryland State Senate. She has been doing this work for a long time. And here we are now seeing a lot of the fruit of her labor. And so we reached out to Senator Carter to join us. How are you? Thank you for joining us today.
Dr. Kay, hi, and hi to everyone that's listening. I'm so excited and thrilled to be on your show.
I am thrilled to have you. I know you're tired. You have been working hard, I believe, 90 days straight. And so this has been some season for you, but we've seen some fundamental change. Can you talk first about what's happening with police reform and the work that all of you did to override the governor's veto?
Well, thanks for taking up this serious issue and for the acknowledgement. I will say, Dr. K, people have been giving me some props, some credit for focusing this for a long time, but I know you know, because I watch your Twitter feed in part, that this takes an emotional toll on you. Mm-hmm. Every death, every abuse, yeah. every time that our humanity is not recognized by this government, every time things are accepted under color of law, it's painful because the country, the government, the state, the localities are not, the police departments, they're not saying just that they're not recognizing the humanity of the person. They're saying they don't recognize any of our humanity, and that's problematic. So this has been an emotional season. I want to say to people that have been following somewhat, that are confused, because there were times when I came out and said, "This is not a repeal. This is bull." that at the end of the session, the total package is strong. It is a strong package. And let me tell you, I don't like anything. I am never satisfied with anything. And I am not satisfied that this is absolutely the best ever, but it is good. It is the best ever. Is much better than I ever really expected out of the Maryland General Assembly.
Wow, that's pretty huge to say that. When it seems like, I mean, I'm just thinking about the people that are down there with you, that the fight to make sure this happens. Can you talk with us about maybe two or three things that people can really understand about why you look and say, okay, this actually works? Why you didn't slam your fist down and say this wasn't progressive this time?
So, okay, we have the definition of use of force. The use of force law says now officers must seek alternatives to force. Officers must de-escalate first. Officers must use force only when necessary, and it must be proportional. And if they do not do it, they are subject to criminal penalties. And bystander officers must intervene and must report. Nice. And if they do not, they are subject to criminal penalties. I think it's one of the strongest use of force laws in the country.
I think it is too. Because what I'm thinking of, and this what I'm wrapping my head around for people who are trying to make the connection to what was happening with George Floyd, that you don't just hold the one officer responsible who has a knee on the neck, but even the other officers being complicit as the abuse is being meted out.
Right, exactly. So I'm thrilled about that. I'm thrilled about Anton's Law.
Yes.
Which is the law in the name of Anton Black, the 19-year-old that was killed completely unnecessarily
yes.
in Greensboro, Maryland. And basically, the officer that did it had come from another agency that had a terrible misconduct record, an excessive force record, but it was never known, never disclosed. So Anton's Law now requires or allows for the disclosure of police disciplinary records, sustained and unsustained complaints. And we learned that the Gun Trace Task Force members, namely Officers Herschel and Wayne Jenkins, had 40-some and 60-some complaints unfounded, unsustained against them prior to when they got indicted.
I like those. This is good. So Anton's Law, we have what's happened with police reform. Can you talk with us, since you have more of an eagle's eyes view of what's happening here in Maryland, in terms of becoming more progressive, in terms of really looking to get more control over policing, which is what we've been talking about here in Baltimore City, in terms of being more transformative, do you believe that we're finally at that point where Maryland is moving forward in a leader in that area?
Yeah, finally on police reform we are, absolutely. Okay. Now, you know, I think the Baltimore Police Department for a long time now has been a bit of a disaster. And I know that people are very upset and hurt about what appears to be major dysfunction, both with corruption and the fact that they don't seem to have a strong record on crime and solving murders, homicides, and closing serious cases. That's a real issue. But I need people to really understand that until we fix the cancer, we weed out the cancer of the corruption, the malfunction, the misconduct, the abuse, we are not going to be able to get a police force that can function in that way to increase public safety, because the community doesn't trust them, and rightly so.
Where do you stand? And then I just want to let people know, I know people are calling, 410-319-8888. Senator Carter's going to stay with us for this entire block, so I will take your phone calls after I ask her one more question, which is, where do you stand? Because, you know, not only are you our state senator, but you're also from Baltimore. Like, you understand Baltimore from the ground up. Do you believe that Baltimore should move like Camden did, where we completely abolish the police, fire everyone, and have them get, you know, apply for their jobs, and build it up so that the community has more control over what's happening with policing?
I know many people believe that. Whether I think that's kind of like the utopia, I don't think it matters, because I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. And so because I've been shocked over many years about how establishment politicians are slow to move, as frankly, let's be clear, the General Assembly moved because of George Floyd.
Yeah.
But we knew about Christopher Brown and Corrin Gaines
on,
and Anthony Anderson and Tyrone West and gosh, a myriad of other people. I could go on. 500 Marylanders killed by have fatal encounters with police just since 2000 alone. So we knew about all of that. We knew about the millions and millions of dollars of settlements for misconduct and excessive force cases. We knew about the fact that all these complaints were filed and there was no response to them. We knew all of this for a really long time, and we did nothing about it. When I say we, I mean like the collective we. The Maryland General Assembly was not moved by any of that. And so let's be clear. We should get credit for the hard work and the great legislators are down. And let me be clear. This happened. This happened because we have new blood, new energy. We have different legislators. These are not the same legislators that I had to deal with back in the day when they wouldn't move the needle. For many years, people know I was the only Black woman attorney on in the House of Delegates and on the Judiciary Committee, and now you have about 6, 7, or maybe even 8.
Good.
Different
it's a sign that things. It's a sign that times are changing. Finally.
Yes.
Fine. Well, let's get some callers in here. And we have quite a few of them. So we're on with Senator Jill P. Carter. Let's go to Gene from Pikesville. Then we'll go to Wesley, Brian, and James. Gene, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. And thank you very much, Ms. Carter. Well, you know, job well done.
Thank you.
And I've been following you. I lived in the 2-9 in the Valley over in Nathaniel Oaks Old District. I think that's what you represent now. But I'm up here in Little Palestine.
There.
Yeah, I'm up here in Little Palestine now. Upper Park Heights. And so my question to you, and you've already answered it, really, in reference to, the penalties that the police should pay for their discretions. And so I'm asking you, Dwight Pettit said that the judges and the precedents that have been set in these trials, and you named all the people who died under the supposedly the protection of the police, is like, how are you going to implement this? You know, how will you be able to challenge the precedents that have been set? Because the police said that they feel threatened, right? And that they made a mistake and pulled out a gun instead of a taser. So how will you enforce this? How will it be enforced? Can you talk about enforcement?
Thank you very much, Gene.
So, thank you. And
I'm
going
to hang up and listen to you, dear. Thank you.
So he went from 21229 to, I think, 21215. Still the 41st district, so yay for the district. I'm glad you're my constituent. But it's in the law. So, for example, with the case with Dwayne Wright, the officer would be held accountable under the new Maryland law, for one. What alternatives did you use before you pulled that out? Mm. Number two, did you de-escalate? Three, when you did use force, was it proportionate to the threat? And the answer, I would say, to all those things are no, because I've heard nothing to indicate that he had any type of a weapon or posed any threat. So I would say that even if, so here's the thing. We know that with all of the, like, thousands and thousands of, like, uses of force, that only less than 2% of officers have ever been criminally charged or prosecuted. So what this new law in Maryland on use of force would do is say that most likely she would be charged and held criminally responsible. Maybe if we didn't get her for the assault or the homicide, the murder, we get her for the violation of the use of force law.
Right, and they don't just get to quit, walk away, get fired, still get paid. Like, that's the concern we have. Then we can have a better sense of what justice would look like when it's applied. I'm going to keep going back to the phone calls. 410-319-8888. Brian, Wesley, James, and Jessica. Let's go to Brian next.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Hey, great. Hey, I was calling in, I guess, more to address or just comment on some of the other callers. And I think getting rid of the police argument is a straw argument, or it's a ridiculous argument that doesn't really address some of the bigger problems, because I don't think just getting rid of the police is going to solve your problems. I think, I'm not telling you I have the answers, of course, but I also think, you know, if you want to have reform, I understand the process of reform. I also understand, you know, specific police officers who address specific mental and or problems. Like, I know in other countries, certainly, you know, Great Britain, there are police officers who do not carry weapons, and there are officers who do carry weapons. But I guess part of that also comes with, there's a question of I think you need to answer this question too, is that who becomes a police officer, right? This woman that you just mentioned, who's been a police officer for 26 years, and who becomes a police officer at 22 years of age, and what that looks like as an older police officer versus a younger police officer. I think those are important questions, because what you're going to start to see is maybe you'll start to see a decline in people who possibly want to be police officers or put themselves in this position. I think for the people who call in and say that they don't want police officers in their communities, I think maybe there's the option to maybe even start a program where you can sort of grow your own police officers to a degree where you look to your own community. Because if it's a question of, like, race, or if it's a question of this police officer doesn't look like me, then perhaps maybe that needs to be addressed too. And so I'm going to put some of those things out there, because I don't think getting rid of the police is the solution. Because I know that if there's a problem in my specific, if I have a problem, that's who I'm going to call to help me. And I don't think getting rid of the people who are supposed to help you is the right direction. And I'll hang up and I'll listen to you.
Okay, thank you so much. So Senator Carter, just to follow up on what the caller said, there's a lot of information floating around. We're talking about defund the police, dismantle the police, abolish the police. From your perspective, what do you think is the right answer to try to change the way our communities in particular are being, quote, policed?
So as you well know, the narrative around defund the police is really about something that even the police agree with should happen, which is that we should stop using and wasting the resources of police to respond to non-police issues. They should not be responding to mental health issues. They should not be responding to minor traffic offenses. They should be used for serious matters. That pose a danger to the community, a danger to society. And so, to that extent, I believe that we should move in that direction. And even the police themselves say that we should move in that direction. Like, they don't want to do that work. But what the call is that was interesting, because many people, especially black and brown people, they want to call the police for help. But what they've found too many times, time and time again, is that they haven't gotten help. They've actually been met with tragedy, whether it's in Baltimore, especially during the O'Malley years and a little after, where they were themselves, you know, called to file a complaint where they'd been a victim of a crime and then they themselves were arrested, or they, you know, police looked up and said, oh, you know, there's a warrant on you. Maybe there was or wasn't, but they were then criminalized when they were victims. That's happened time and time again, and even worse than that is when they've been brutalized when they're victims. We have stories of too many mothers have called the police because their child had some type of a mental health issue, and the police response was to kill their child. That's happened time and time again. And so what we found in the black community too often is that those that we would hope would help us, serve us, protect us, have harmed us. That's a real issue. That's why the legislature took on this issue as a priority finally this year. I got to say that. I'm never going to be like, oh, you know, too much kudos. We should have done it a decade ago or two decades ago, maybe.
Mm. I'm with Senator Jill P. Carter, 410-319-8888. We have Jessica on the phone, then I'll go to James. Jessica, how are you?
That's okay. I'm doing so well, and I'm happy to be a part of the conversation. God bless everyone.
Thank you.
I'll speak as quickly as I can. Policing is a social issue, and this is my opinion. I could be wrong, but policing is a social issue. I don't believe it's a criminal issue. However, the justice system has mislabeled the troubled black youth in the condensed areas where crime is so often overproduced. They've labeled these young black youth, who are our cousins, our sons, our nephews, they've mislabeled them as criminals. And so this is a misfortune. And so there is no such thing, and again, this is my opinion, there is no such thing as policing, because the words that we're using are subconsciously training our brains to handle situations. Because if you think about it, we're driving down the street, we see a corner store, we see guys standing outside. Automatically, subconsciously, we're afraid of these young boys who, again, are our cousins, right, our sons, our nephews, because we don't understand where they come from. So we have got to stop, and when I say we, I mean the police, I mean the senators, I mean you and I. We have got to stop labeling these young black boys as troubled youth, as gangsters. And so we have to change the labeling to a more positive way for us to communicate with them. And this leads me to my last point, my next point, because the police, this is a social issue, so they should be able to communicate with these black boys before they're locking them up. You shouldn't just jump out of a police patrol car ready to fight with these. These are young boys being policed by older white men who do not understand who they are or where they come from. They don't speak the same languages, and that's the first disconnect. My grandmother was born in 1932. When she first came to Baltimore, the police, we used to know them by name. We knew every police officer who patrolled our neighborhood. But now it's not the same. And the last thing I'm going to say is there is no therapy or debriefing for these police officers. They oftentimes do not have college degrees. They do not understand how to communicate.
Right. Okay, now I got to stop you there, Jessica. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Senator Carter, so
I agree with everything she said, by the way.
Yeah, although it was everything. I'm just giving it two thumbs up for her. But I noticed that when people talk about policing, and I don't know if you've noticed this, there's always this throwback to the way things used to be. Like, cops used to know our name. They would walk the streets. They would, you know, play jump rope with us. Like, you know, this kind of romanticized idea of policing. Policing has always been brutal in our country and brutal in our community.
I agree with you completely, but I think that what they are referring to is there was a time, and I even remember this time, when as a child in Baltimore, and I lived in a black middle-class area, Ashburton, there were black police officers and some white that were of the community, meaning we knew them. We knew where they lived. They were a part of the community. You might go to a neighborhood association meeting, and they were there as residents, not police. You might go to, like, family night at one of the churches or schools, which is a regular thing we did. They'd be there with their family. So that, I think, is what people reference, that there was a time when they weren't, like, these alien or, like, occupying forces. They actually were part of our community. We don't have that anymore. We haven't had it for a long time. Now, that does not dismiss the fact that often there's always been racism and policing and racist policing. And if you talk to any black police officer in Baltimore City Police Department, they will tell you of the racism that they've had to endure, both in terms of having to go along with racist policing and themselves experiencing internalized racism within the department. I mean, I've talked to so many, and they all have had that experience.
Well, Senator Jill P. Carter, thank you so much for joining us. She represents the 41st Legislative District of Baltimore City in the Maryland State Senate. As always, it's been an honor and a privilege, Senator Carter.
Thank you. My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you. So, folks, don't hang up. If you're holding, don't hang up, because when we come back from the break, Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is going to join us, and he can answer your questions. Keep it here.